Until only recently, athlete, actor, singer, and political activist Paul Robeson was one of the most underappreciated human figures of the 20th century. He helped break down racial barriers and ignorance, but accusations of communist affiliations in the 1950s forced him into obscurity for most of his later life until his death from a stroke in 1976. Upstate New York academic and performance artist Ken Anderson has developed a living history of Robeson. WRVO's Mark Lavonier caught up with Ken and brings you this half-hour special featuring actual recordings of the black American whose activities in part led to the civil rights movement of the 1960s. And now, America's Sung Hero, a tribute to Paul Robeson.
When I'd go to a music store to get a book of Negro spirituals, I would find that they were usually cued at a range that was high for me. I think God blessed me with some good pipes. I'm a bass.
I'm singing.
Singing is making sad folks happy. Singing is sweetness in a bitter world. Give us singing, and singing gives us strength.
We're with you there, mister.
And here's a voice that had sung itself into the heart of America, the beauty of America. Here's a voice with all the glory of America, Paul Robeson.
When I'd hear Paul Robeson sing, it's conversational for me. And if you're going to sing a song, study it, learn about it.
When Dvorak, the great Czech composer, was in America, he said, "In the Negro melodies of America, I discover all that is needed for a great and noble school of music. They are pathetic, tender, passionate, melancholy, solemn, religious, bold, merry, gay, gracious, or what you will."
After hearing Paul sing these old familiar songs and some things that I should have known, which he taught me, I got excited about this man. He is my hero. Great, great American. Hero.
Swing low, sweet chariot, come in for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, come in for to carry me.
So I started to combine the two things of singing Paul's songs, but also talking about a man who had been just maligned and almost they tried to destroy him here in this country. He was the best known man on the planet in the 40s and early 50s, and the climate was such that this government decided that they had to silence him. We're not teaching about him in the history books. I get to travel and sing and talk about black history. And I'll go into any venue and see images of all the famous black civil rights leaders, W.E.B. Du Bois and Sojourner Truth and so forth. No Paul Robeson. And that's white as well as black churches and social institutions, because they maligned him. They called him a communist. And people got frightened about this man. They had to silence him. Born in Princeton, New Jersey, April 9th, 1898, a preacher's kid. His daddy was an escaped slave from North Carolina from a plantation in 1860, fought in the Civil War, made his way to the area where Lincoln University is located, and he finally got a master's of art and a bachelor's of divinity. In those days, they wanted to educate blacks so that they would become ministers. And the thought among some of them was, we'll educate these guys to lead their flocks back to Africa, or certainly to be ministers to serve the colored flock. So the old man ended up called to the Witherspoon Presbyterian Church in Princeton, in New Jersey. Interesting time. A man named Woodrow Wilson was president of Princeton. subsequently, he moved to Somerville, New Jersey, where he became an AME Zion minister. Paul Robeson grew up as the youngest of five children in Princeton and saw his mother die when the women wore long dresses in those days and caught on fire. So he was raised by his dad and his older brothers. When I do Robeson programs very often, I sing, "Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, long ways from home, a long ways from home." Paul was bright. He was exceptional. He was involved in drama and the arts when he was in high school. A wonderful English teacher who coached him. Got to his junior year, he should have taken a competitive exam to qualify to be admitted into a senior college in Jersey. His high school principal didn't like Paul being forward, and he denied him the opportunity to take that exam. He had to take both portions of it in his senior year, but he aced it. And so therefore he was eligible at a time when the old man didn't have money to send him to his alma mater where his brothers and sister had gone. So he was only the second black to be admitted to Rutgers University. He went out for football. He was a big guy. Coach tried him out, and he looked good. His fellow players decided that no way were they going to play with a nigger. That was the term that they used. And they designed a play to run over Paul, and they beat up on him. Broke his nose, damaged his arm, did some bad stuff to him. Paul went back home and said to his pop, "Hey, I can't handle this." And his dad and his brother said, "Hey, you got to." So when he healed and he went back, the same teammates, is not the term, tried to do the same thing again. And he brushed aside one or two guys and got to the guy who would beat up on him. And he bench pressed him. He held him over his head. And the coach said, "Don't you touch him. He's on the varsity." And Paul dropped him on the ground.
"I met my brother the other day. I gave him my right hand. And just as soon as ever my back was turned, he scandalized my name."
Rutgers then, for the first time, began to have a winning seasons in football. In addition, Paul was a giant in terms of his intellectual powers. Phi Beta Kappa in his junior year, was valedictorian in his senior year and graduated summa cum laude. And he played semi-professional football for a year and then went to Columbia University Law School and repeated the process as valedictorian and summa cum laude. When he was at the law firm where one of his classmates had invited him to join, there was a rather infamous case in Harlem that his law firm had gotten, and Paul probably thought that he was going to be there to represent him. He'd done research for the firm for quite some time. Two things happened. One, they decided that no, they wouldn't let Paul represent this prestigious law firm at the bar. And the secretary said that she wouldn't take dictation from a nigger. A good, strong, proud Paul says, bump you, and he left.
You're listening to America's Sung Hero, the life of Paul Robeson told in story and song. Producer Mark Lavonier met with singer and historian Ken Anderson to learn more about Paul, who we now hear in a performance from 1935.
"I'd now like to sing, end with that most majestic of Negro folk songs, Go Down Moses.
When Israel was in Egypt's land, let my people go."
He was really the first prominent artist of his caliber to give concerts solely of Negro spirituals and folk songs, 16 songs. So he was a forerunner in there. I was in special services when I was in the Army in the early 1950s. I got there because they had a competition I sang Vincent Newman's Without Song and Paul Robeson's, or Jerome Kern and Hammerstein's Old Man River. As a consequence, I recall being invited by a dentist who lived in Stuttgart, who had heard me over the radio. And he put on this record, which was like yay thick, Paul singing Old Man River. The voice was just gorgeous.
Now, in 1928, Paul performed Old Man River in the play Showboat on the London stage.
Showboat, which was written, the role of Joe was written with Paul Robeson in mind. He was over in Europe acting at the time.
I wanted to ask you, did he have some great affinity for England, or was he so revered there that he just decided to seize the opportunity to work where people appreciated him?
Well, all Afro-American performers in that time faced gross rank discrimination in this country. They could not really pursue their art in freedom because of the racial discrimination. You had to stay in private homes because you couldn't stay in the hotels. He experienced that when he was in college back at Rutgers, when if he was on the debating team that might be traveling somewhere, they had to find separate accommodations. Once he went to Europe, Paul and everybody else said, "Hey, I feel free. I feel like a human being, a whole person."
The magic key of RCA turns to Paul Robeson in London, England.
"I'm so happy to be here through the courtesy of the magic key, Ara. It does seem like magic when I can sing to the folks at home from such a great distance. My first song is a Negro folk song about knowing the Ark, the old Ark, the mover. The old ark, the mover in, a mover in, a mover in. Old ark, the mover in, a mover in along. Old ark, the mover in, a mover in, a mover in. Old ark, the mover in, a mover in along."
Now, 1930, he performed in sort of a first, and it received 20 curtain calls, and that was his role as Shakespeare's Othello.
"Why is this? Thinkst thou I have to make a life of jealousy? To follow still the changes of the moon with fresh suspicions? No. To be once in doubt is once to be resolved. Exchange me for a goat, when I shall turn the business of my soul to such exsufflicate and blown surmises matching thy inference."
I think that Paul stands on the shoulders, in the sense of Shakespearean acting, of this guy who was an expatriate. Ira Aldrich went over to England and to Europe and was renowned as an interpreter of Shakespeare's plays, including Othello. 1920s, and for a black man to perform on an American stage in the role of a Moor, This was the time when Paul and just so many talented people had to go to Europe to be free as an artist and to express themselves. I think Paul stood so tall. Any Afro-American who was sensitive to the racism in this country, you know, it hits you in so many different ways that you've got to respond. Racism is woven into the fabric of our society in such invidious ways that you'd have to literally unravel that Constitution, which we revere, when you think about the fact that black folk were not even considered as human beings. We were considered as chattel, as property. After the Civil War, we would not have won the Civil War if it hadn't been for the way the black soldiers just literally gave up their lives to fight for their freedom. And we got sold out not too long after that. And Paul grew up in that climate. We were two separate and distinct societies, one white and one black.
There were spirituals and blues that sounded a note of deep protest. For example, how long must my people weep and mourn? Too long, they've been barely mizzen along. And No More, sung at the end of the Civil War, becomes today a song of protest, demanding that the promise of the Emancipation Proclamation be fully realized.
Paul Robeson was a soul voice among black people who were speaking out against the terrible racism in this country.
No more auction block for me. No more, no more. No more auction block for me. Many thousand gone.
There was Paul Robeson, a lone voice out there. They called him a communist because the man was talking about peace and justice and freedom for all people, and especially people who were oppressed. When Hitler was gearing up his weapons of war, Paul Robeson went over and sang on the battlefield to support. They called him a communist. Hitler had rounded up people who were deemed as unfit to live and put them in work camps. Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, and the like. Paul sang the foreign surgeon generals. He sang the peat bog soldiers. You know, the Nazis almost ran him out of Germany while he was over there. He was just a Renaissance man, a man ahead of his time.
Now, one of the main forums for Paul to really stand out and grab the attention of Americans was during the Pursuit of Happiness program on November 5th, 1939, when at the end of the program he sang the Ballad for Americans.
And he drew a larger radio listening audience than at Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. I recall as a child hearing that. It's a great statement that I am an American.
Still nobody would anybody believe it. Everybody would anybody, they doubted it. And they are doubting still, and I guess they always will. But who cares what they say when I am on my way?
Hey, will you please tell us who you are?
What's your name, buddy?
Where are you going?
Who are you?
Well, I'm everybody who's nobody. I'm the nobody who's everybody.
What's your racket? What do you do for a living?
Well, I'm an engineer, musician, street cleaner, carpenter, teacher.
How about a farmer?
Also.
In the same year that he performed that, in 1939, he was refused service at a New York restaurant. And then the next year, during his American run of Showboat in 1940, he had trouble finding accommodations in Los Angeles. But during this time, in the top magazines and publications of the day, and the critics named Paul Robeson as the top Negro performer in America, how could he still have such discriminatory hardship after becoming one of the most recognized and celebrated performers, period, regardless of his race or ethnicity?
It didn't matter whether you were a prominent person at the level of a Paul Robeson or just an ordinary citizen. We were all subject to that. I think back to, and I made a reference to this earlier, that a man named Woodrow Wilson, who became president of the United States, when he went down to Washington, D.C., the first thing that he did was to segregate our nation's capital. I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, and was born at the Memorial Hospital, where they had a separate delivery room for white women and black women. And in those days, you couldn't buy clothes in the clothing store. You couldn't attend the theaters. You lived usually in the worst portions of town, by the industrial areas, by the railroad tracks. And when you traveled at your hazard. That's what Wilson did. Segregated the whole country. So when a man like Paul would go to Europe or wherever and say, I feel free, I feel like a human being for the first time in my life, and then the right-wingers here accuse him of being an American because he's talking about us overseas.
Now, it was said that during the McCarthy hearings with the House Un-American Activities Committee, he refused to name any names or any affiliation with the Communist Party. And to my understanding, others, to appease the committee, had to renounce Paul Robeson.
They did. It was one of the most sad times in our history when people of goodwill, and even some friends of Paul's, said, hey, I got a family to raise, I got a career to maintain, and they spoke out against him. So many people got caught up in that terrible situation.
Now, in and around that time, Paul was speaking about the plight of the black soldier at the Paris Congress of the World Partisans of Peace to his message of unity at rallies he would hold in Harlem. What really made history is what is known as the Peekskill riots. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about what happened.
Only from what I've been personally informed by two people, Ella Mazel, who was a part of a youth group that was there setting up the tables in preparation for Paul to come up and give this concert when some thugs started to overturn the tables and disrupt the situation. And from a man named Pete Seeger, who was there with his young wife and baby at the time.
You won't get the true story from the daily press or the radio, so we're putting it on record for you now. Here are the facts.
You are invited to a summer concert with Paul Robeson, Pete Seeger, Hope Foy, Joan Schlesinger, and George Walker for the benefit of the Harlem chapter of the Civil Rights Congress. Sunday, August 27th, 1949, at the Lakeland Picnic Grove, Peekskill, New York.
Robeson was in a caravan coming up from New York City, and the people who preceded him, when they got to a certain point, they were directed by New York State Police toward the area where the concert was to be held. But there were a group of local folks who had been recruited to throw bricks and stones and building blocks and stuff at these people. And it was in collusion with the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the State Police, and the Ku Klux Klan. Now that's a hell of a powerful force, I tell you.
More facts. Police protection was asked. Four deputies showed up to watch 700 so-called veterans attack the early picnickers. These 700 hoodlums closed the only exits, and for 3 hours, they were kept from killing the women and children by a brave group of 39 men and boys, Negro and white.
And the thing about it is that none of those organizations have ever apologized for that horrible blight on our history. That concert was aborted in August. It subsequently was performed in September.
Well, we did go back on September 4th, and we went back 25,000 strong. While 4,000 trade unionists, most of them real veterans, formed a protective guard, we held our concert with Paul Robeson and Pete Seeger, and it was a beautiful day, a fine performance and a victory for all Americans.
We must keep fighting until we're tired, and old man River is just keep rolling along.
After the Peekskill incident, Paul Robeson spoke out against the Korean War. It was in this year, 1950, that he got his passport taken away.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even allowed in Canada, where you didn't even need a passport.
And for either 3 or 4 successive years, he would stand on the border between the United States and Canada and sing across the border to 40,000 people gathered on the other side because we had taken away his passport. They had suggested, Paul, if you be an apostate and say all the right things, we'll give you back your passport. And the man of courage and conviction said, no way.
All of us with one heart, with the torch of freedom, march on. With the torch of freedom, march on, march on, march on and on.
Again, from being the highest paid performer in the world, they reduced his income and denied him access to any public performing stage. He could sing at the black churches, even there. The ministers were threatened with taking away their tax exemptions. That's what he was limited to.
What were those concerts called that were on the border, the U.S.-Canada border?
Peace Arch Park concerts. Paul spoke on behalf, sang on behalf, advocated on behalf of the common man around the world. But we were in a course, I guess, about the Cold War, and Paul's voice couldn't be tolerated. Paul was over in Russia, and he was invited to a party. The CIA had been messing around with a chemical that was a derivative of LSD, which they were trying to give to foreign leaders who didn't go along with our policies. And they gave some of this stuff to Paul. Somebody spiked his drink and he took it and went back to his room and cut his wrist. It is alleged that the doctors who treated him were CIA operatives. They flew him to London and put him in a priory, and they gave him 57 convulsive shock treatments, try to wipe out his brain. I know that he was scheduled to meet with Castro, and the Bay of Pigs was in the process. That perhaps might be why that meeting was aborted by him giving that drug. He was never the same after that. He spent the last 10 years of his life living with his school teacher sister in West Philadelphia. Paul was a Renaissance man. He was just all that. And I just love and admire and respect what he stood for. And the tragedy to me is that it's not taught. It's not in the history books. It's not taught in the schools. Eventually, when I get to colleges and universities, there's an eager audience. But the blessing for me is when I can get into a junior high school or junior college and talk to young people about Paul. I'm old now, but I feel this is my mission. It's a ministry for me to sing the spirituals. It's a mission to talk about Paul Robeson. I wish that, in that sense, that there were a few dozen Afro-American men who would sing Robeson songs and to talk about Paul and the greatness of Paul and his commitment to democratic principles in this country.
Certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in, a plot of earth, a street, grocer and the butcher and the people that I meet, children in the playground, faces that I see, all races, all religions, that's America to me. But especially the people, that's America to me.
America's Sung Hero, a tribute to Paul Robeson, was produced and edited by Mark Lavonier. Special thanks to Kenneth Anderson, Chris Ulanowski, and Kurt and Brad of the St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Bath, New York. Questions or comments can be sent via email to mark@wrvo.fm. Thank you for listening.